Tonight on Standing Room Only, part 3 of Student Stories.
Welcome to Standing Room Only, featuring lectures, town hall meetings, and other public forums recorded on location by WFHB community volunteers. This program amplifies voices not adequately represented in mainstream media to help raise public consciousness of issues affecting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
In early April, a group of students taught by Rachel Barr at the Academy of Science and Entrepreneurship told their stories. Their themes ranged from being the new kid to dealing with a campsite disaster. In the first half of the show, we'll hear from Trevor Shaw, Emmanuel Corder, Amy Martin, and Jared Stewart. We begin today's show with Trevor Shaw's story about the meaning of a name, or 10.
Trevor is a diabetic with a lot of names. He learned to cherish his own name. Trevor's title is 10 Names, 1 Kid.
First through 7th grade were the more harder times in my life. I had to deal with a lot of harassment and bullying, especially from the kids that were a grade above me, like 2nd, 3rd grade, because they thought that they were big stuff being in 2nd and 3rd grade. So I had to deal with a lot of harassment from them. They would make fun of my diabetes, and a lot of the boys would make fun of my size, because, you know, with boys, it's always a competition. Has to be. If it's not, it's nothing. Growing up, I was fairly tall, but I was a noodle. So with no real size advantage, I was a prime target for the bullies at the school. And so it all started when I was at, when I first went to my school. It was called Pinnacle. So I first got in there and I was scared, like you'd usually be, but I wasn't scared for the simple fact it was a new thing. I was more scared that people wouldn't like me because of my diabetes. A lot of the kids ran away from me because they thought it was contagious. And a lot of them just thought I was a freak because I took shots every day, every meal, every time I ate. And I never really had any friends until I actually made a few friends that were so good friends, like a little bit clingy, but really good friends. Around 2nd grade, I made a friend named John. He was one of the bigger kids, like big enough that the bullies were nervous around him. So I got it in my head that he's nice. I want to make friends with him. So I went to talk to him, and we had this long conversation. I forgot what it was about, but he eventually took me under his wing, and we became best friends. And through the years, we were literally almost brothers. We would hang out together during class, during lunch. We did a lot of stuff together. And so we went into 6th, 5th grade together. And around that time, he gave me a nickname, Diabetal. Yeah. So I thought that was pretty cool, because I thought that meant I was cool enough to get a nickname like that. Everyone started calling me this. When I say everyone, I mean everyone, teachers included. And so this went on all year. And the thing you gotta know is all my friends, take shots at each other. Like, one would call the other stupid, and the other would be like, right back at you. And, I mean, they weren't really mean. A lot of them were actually really, really nice. It was just our way of saying, hey, you're still my friend, but we're more like family. But at the same time, there were some of them that were actually being mean, like they meant it. And I never really got that because I thought that they were just trying to be friends. So this went on all year. Eventually another diabetic student came to Pinnacle. His name was Luke. And he took my old name, and I received a new name, Diet Beet Juice. And this is referring to Beetlejuice, because they would say my name a few times and I'd pop up. And so they started calling me this. And so this was towards the end of the year. So summer started, and everyone left the school for their summer vacation. And so I was at my dad's working, and I just started thinking of that nickname John had given me, Diabetal. I'm going through my head. And the reason it kind of popped into my head, I was, my dad does a lot of woodwork. So I was picking up logs, putting them in a fire and stuff. And my blood sugar started to go on the lower side. And I was also struggling after two or three logs that were only 5 inches long and about 2 inches wide. Like, something you could easily pick up. And I was like, wait a minute. He's making fun of me. My size and my diabetes. And so when school started up again, I tended to stay away from him because he hurt me. And he didn't really know I was staying away from him. But eventually he transferred to a different school. I think it was Lake Mead or something. I don't know. And I stayed, and I decided that I was going to be the one that would help the kids that were being bullied or didn't necessarily like themselves. And so I stuck with that thought all year. Summer started, and I went to this diabetes camp called Camp John Warvel. And this is a camp for diabetics. So like you're protected on that side. But so I went there and I met this little kid. I forgot his name, but he was 7, 6 years old. And he was being bullied by another 6, 7 years old kid. And me being the oldest, I was like, hey, what's going on? And the first 6, 7 year old, let's call him friend one. he was like, well, this kid's been doing that stuff and said this and that. And I went to the second one, and I was like, hey, what's your side of the story? He's like, well, he did that and this. And I was like, okay. And putting that all aside, I was like, okay, what's your hobbies? And he's like, well, I like Legos. I was like, okay, that's cool. What do you like? He's like, I like ninjas. And this is around the same time a cartoon came out called Ninjago, which is a Lego ninja show. And I thought of that. I was like, oh, well, that's on TV now. And I was like, hey, there's this show called Ninjago. I don't know if you've heard about it, but, I mean, it's about ninjas and Legos. And there's a lot of violence. And so I convinced them that it was a really good show, and they became friends and started talking about ninja Legos and, yeah, katanas. And so I kind of got through my head, hey, I'm good at this. I can bring people together. And so school started back up, and that's around the time I learned I had a little pet peeve. And it was, so, like, I would get super angry when people dissed or said something bad about themselves. Like, super angry. And so I pulled each student, and I was like, hey, you are amazing and awesome in your own way. Don't diss yourself. And talking to those kids, I taught myself something that you are the best you. You may not be the prettiest or the strongest, but you have your own name. You can make your own meaning its own meaning. Cherish it. If you give yourself your own name, you may even relieve some stress. I should know.
Now we have Emmanuel Corder. Emmanuel is a 14-year-old introverted high school freshman who enjoys drawing in his free time. Emmanuel's title is The New Kid.
I'm used to the feeling of being the new kid. I've moved to so many different schools, and if you can imagine, that can be really hard, especially for an introvert. And being an introvert means that I don't always make the best first impressions. So my story takes place during middle school, and I attended Jackson Creek Middle School. And it was eighth grade, it was the last year of middle school, and it was my fifth time moving to a new school. And so, yeah. So the first day, I was a bit late. I'm always late on first days. And this school greeted me with, like, this town hall look, and, like, the cafeteria and the gym was on my right, and a hallway leading to classrooms were on my left. And so as I was late, a river of students were pouring out of the cafeteria to go to class, and the roar of echoes of the students was tremendous. And once I found my way into the river of students, I was, like, bombarded with, like, hormonal teenagers. And so I was, like, bum-rushed, and I couldn't find my way to my class. I didn't know what class I was supposed to go to, and I was the last one in the hallways, and it was echoey and, like, quiet. So this school was, like, an organized maze. Like, all the rooms were numbered, all the hallways had different colors, but yet I still got lost, and I eventually just had to get to the office to guide me. So once I got to my first class, it was math class, and I opened the door, and it felt like 1,000 eyes speared my chest. And I don't know why, but that always happens when I'm late to a classroom. So I slowly, awkwardly shuffled my way to the nearest empty desk. In what felt like hours of quiet, the teacher finally spoke and brought me up to the front of the classroom to introduce me. So she had all the students introduce themselves, and once it came to my turn, I told my name and said something stupid like drawing. And so I sat back down, and I had math class. So fast forward a bit, and it's after third period, which is lunch. And I just think of it as like a little break in the day. I can finally relax. But yet I still had to find an empty table to avoid the awkwardness of another person. So once I found an empty table, it was already like half the lunch period, and kids were already putting away their trays. I wasn't that hungry anyways, and I didn't have any lunch money, so I didn't get lunch. So I just sat down and like read a book. So after a few minutes of sitting down, a redheaded fellow came up to me and said, "Could I sit here?" And me being the awkward potato, slowly and awkwardly said, "Yeah, sure." So after like what felt hours of silence, he finally opened up a conversation, and with few responses, I continued the conversation. So we slowly became friends, and like it turns out we had all these classes together, and he liked things that I like, and we slowly started to hang out. Like we went to each other's houses and hung out after school. And so by the end of the school year, I've met like two other people and made many great memories, but my best memory was of my first friend. And so by the end of the day, I've had my yearbook signed, and I've signed other people's yearbooks. And I was on the bus ride home, and I just realized that I had not gotten any communication, like phone numbers, from him. And yes, I went the whole school year without getting his phone number. And so, yeah, I don't know where he is or what he's doing, but I just look back on that year and think introverts can make friends too, but in really, really difficult ways. Thank you.
Next up is Amy Martin. The name of her narrative is Spray Paint and Little Girls. Amy is always trying to learn. She enjoys visiting new places and learning the history and culture. She always runs into a type of mystery anywhere she goes.
So, New Orleans always lingers in my mind. I would visit family, eat at the food trucks, throw parties when someone just decides to visit. These memories taught me lessons that I use in my daily life. One lesson stood out among the others, though. So whenever I would go visit New Orleans, I would stay with my grandmother. During this time, I'd go visit other relatives that lived in New Orleans. One morning, I got up, did my usual morning routine, and left. I was planning to go visit my aunt in the French Quarter. The French Quarter. I had forgotten that she lived in the French Quarter. I liked that place, of course, but the outskirts where she lived could get a little frightening. You know, the usual drugs, gangs, voodoo, cult, so shebang. Well, the tourists usually stayed out of the outskirts for these reasons. You usually went to go see the middle of the French Quarter where it was all modern and glamorous. I wish I would have done that, but I couldn't. So I'm going along, and I see these houses in the French Quarter, which scared me, I think, more than the crime. The houses looked like no one lived in them, but I knew people did. They had, like, boards covering the windows, tape covering up cracks in the windows to keep the cold out, shutters falling off the roof, and paint chipping off the houses into the ground where kids' toys laid everywhere. I continued on, though, passing by these houses in silence. Silent. It was the path I always took to our house was silent. So it shocked me to hear the sound coming from about maybe, I don't know, not too far away from me, maybe a foot or two. And I couldn't see it because there was buildings covering up a lot of the corners. And I'm getting really, like, curious, I think more than I was scared, because I'm like, why is there sound here? There's never sound here. And I hear these voices talking about health class and homework and how it was stupid and useless. And I was like, okay. I was like, okay, I'm not, you know, freaking out too much. I'm like, I hear this all the time during the school year. I'm like, they're just normal teenage students like me. And I'm kind of like standing there. I'm like, okay. And they go and they turn around the block. And the first thing I notice about these kids is their appearance. The boys looked like they were straight out of the 50s. Had the leather jackets, the white t-shirts, skinny jeans. The vibe I got from was trouble. I was so scared to have to walk by these kids. I was like, if I give them a sideways glance, will they like beat me up or something? And so in this mist of freaking out, I hid. I hid behind this old building that I saw. And I'm standing there, and these kids walk by. They show about two buildings up from where I'm hiding. And they have these cans. I couldn't tell what these cans were at the time. They weren't pop cans or like canned food. And I'm just watching them. Watching out of curiosity. They take these cans and they pour them out this wall. And then I realized what these cans were. These were spray paint and they're about to vandalize that building. And so I'm like, oh, it's nothing like violent or anything. I know I shouldn't be too worried about this. But one thing made me stay there that made me curious. There was a boy in the back, staying away from the group, looking kind of nervous and uneasy. He jumped when a can of spray paint was thrown on his face. Come on, don't be a wuss, another boy said. And I was like, okay, this is going somewhere. And like the whole crowd, the group of kids, just noticed that he wasn't doing anything and like slowly walked towards him. And I'm like freaking out now. I'm like, what's about to happen? And they go up to this boy. And the main boy that threw that spray paint can at him kicked him in the shin, making him fall to the ground. The other boys started to crowd around him and started kicking and punching him, and I'm literally freaking out behind that building. I did not know what to do. I was freaking out thinking, why am I the only one here? Why is there no one else coming to help? And they started to beat this boy, and I'm like, in the movies, I've seen kids get beat up so bad that they died. And I'm freaking out. I know I should have done something, but I was scared so bad I was petrified in that spot. The fighting slowly stopped until they completely, everything went quiet. I thought the entire world has gone still. I thought that maybe they had killed that boy. The group got up and left that boy on the sidewalk by himself with only a knee around. I stood there. I was about to walk out, but then I heard a cry. I was relieved because I knew that they didn't kill him, but I was scared. And so out of this, I knew that boy probably needed help. So I got up and I walked over there. He was crying on the sidewalk, but he must have saw me coming over there because he stopped his crying and like he was sitting on the sidewalk, like waiting for a friend. I went over there and I crouched down in front of him. He finally made eye contact with me. He had bruises all over his face. He had two cuts, one on his forehead, one on his jaw, and it looked like his nose is broken, judging from the shape of it and the blood coming from his nostrils. That eye contact felt like it lasted for hours, but I knew it only lasted for about 10 seconds. After he looked away, he got up and sprinted as fast as he could by being injured away from me. I stood there on that sidewalk, confused of what I should do. And I didn't know what to do. Nothing could have changed now. It was gone. And so I got up and I went to my aunt's house. That fight stuck in my mind for days after that. It ran through my mind thinking, do those bullies feel bad about what they did? What could I have done? And these questions bothered me for a very long time afterwards. Sometimes they even bother me now. But I had to try to get over it. I mean, this couldn't have to rule my life. So one day, my friends invited me to the mall. I went with them, of course, and when we were walking in, there's this group of girls, maybe around the age 10. They're all kind of like whispering and snickering to each other. One points across the parking lot to another little girl. And I'm thinking, I'm like, are these little girls making fun of that little girl? And after seeing that fight, I knew I had to defend someone who couldn't defend themselves. And so, out of curiosity, I went over to those girls and I was going to find out what they were doing. I walked up to them, they got quiet, kind of looked at me blank-eyed and kind of scared. And I was like, why are you guys snickering at the little girl? And they were completely silent. I was kind of agitated, thinking that they might have been bullying this little girl. So out of anger, I said, you shouldn't judge someone just because of the way they look or they don't do the things you do. I didn't realize how important of a thing I said to those girls and to myself. But this became a life motto for me. And I know anywhere I go, I remember that day in New Orleans, hiding behind that building, watching spray paint find the wall to an abandoned supermarket, and hearing the cries of an innocent boy who couldn't do wrong. Thank you.
Next up is Jared Stewart. The name of his narrative is A Campsite Disaster. Jared is a freshman at the Academy of Science and Entrepreneurship who was born in Bloomington, Indiana. He grew up with an aspiration for cars and speed. Jared.
So, I'm about 4 years old, and I grew up mostly just watching Sesame Street and playing with Hot Wheels. And I also love the outdoors. I've lived in Bloomington probably about all my life. And like as I'm growing up, I've like had this strong like love for like my cousins. But my cousins were about 3 to 4 hours away, making visits to see them like very scarce. So my aunts and uncles get together, and they have this, they have this kind of family reunion, but it's more of like a campsite kind of like thing. And it's about, we go there for about a week, and I don't remember where the campsite was, but it had, at least it had a lake. So that's all I remember. And so I'm at this campsite with my cousins, and we arrive, and there's like, we have a camper, and there's like three slots taken up. Like we're all here. There's like probably about 20 people. And I like
have like this love like with my like crazy cousins who like just like grew up in northern Indiana. So they're like really wild. We're just like hanging around, and my dad asked me if me and my cousin want to help build a campfire. And naturally, I said yes. We were both like extremely excited to do this. And so we spend the next like couple days building and like being around this campfire that like I'm not afraid of anymore. And my dad tells me like not to mess around the fire, because fire is dangerous and it can hurt you. I must have tuned this out, because I found myself messing around the fire all the time. And so it's about 11 o'clock at night, and so it's like really dark, and there's also like these chairs like positioned, like the camping chairs are positioned really close to the fire, because it was like embers, so it was like almost, the fire was like almost out, and the chairs are there, it's dark, and there's the fire pit, and the chairs are super close, and I'm sitting down in the chair, and I decide to, like, we're supposed to get up to like all go to sleep and like the camper. And I get up to, like, make some hot dogs before I can go to sleep to get them. And I, like, kind of, like, speed walk. And that's where it's, like, a big problem, because, you know, it's dark. There's chairs really close to this fire. And I'm, like, moving very fast. So what do you think's going to happen? So I trip on, like, the edge of, like, the chair. And I fall directly into the fire in like this push-up position, like. But don't worry, there's like this cooking grate that was like protecting me, sort of. So I had my hands on there. My dad's like, "Oh shoot, I better move him." So he yanks me up in like about a second, like dad reflexes this real quick, and we have to like go and like take me back over. Like, and we're in like the car, and like we had no one knew what to do because we had burns, and my hands are all pink and scarred and like seared, like flesh burnt and stuff. And so we go into the car, no one knew what to do, so we just go to the nearest hospital, and it's about 40 minutes away, so it's just like this big painful ride. And this is from the perspective of my parents, because my memory is completely blanked after falling into the fire. So my mom tells me that whenever we were in the car, I was just bawling my eyes out, crying, just tears everywhere. And she like had like this Coke can that she got out to drink for herself. And it was like the last cold thing, like in the freezers, because we were about to like leave and there's like no ice. So she gives me this. She's like, "Wait." Her thought process was like, "Wait, let's give my son, who has burning hands, this ice-cold Coca-Cola to hold to help the burns." So I get there, and I have like second-degree burns, and it's bad. And in this moment, I realize, like looking back on it, that I really should listen to my parents.
You have been listening to part 3 of Student Stories on Standing Room Only on WFHB. You've been listening to a series of stories told in early April by a group of students taught by Rachel Barr at the Academy of Science and Entrepreneurship. Their themes range from following the rules to embracing friendship. In the second half of the show, we'll hear from Pacey Wu, Jalen Boone, and Jack Newquist. Turn to the show with Pacey Wu and her story, I Follow the Rules.
Pacey has an over-energetic personality and is always talking, and when is quiet, her friends get worried. She likes to read and likes to go to school.
All right, I have three things that I grew up adoring, and that was my family, the outdoors, and most of all, books. I was surrounded by books because of three people. My two oldest sisters, who had books scattered all over their floors because they had no bookshelves. And then my mother, who had bookshelves, but she always read them. So they never had dust on them, which was really strange in my 5-year-old mind. And I'm still at home because I didn't make that mark. And I'm alone with my dad, who's asleep in the next room. So I'm like, okay, let's try to read one of these books. I grab the lowest shelved book in my mom's room. She's read this so many times because I can tell with the white crease lines. My dad finds out, he picks it up and says, no, not for you. I didn't know at the time, but it was mostly because I would rip out book pages after I read them, or I would paint them with nail polish. Ruin the books. Now, because of this, I started not liking reading or trying to grab a book. And it's happened for quite a while. So, third grade, I was forced to read because of my third grade teacher, Miss Cappy. Now, I was like, why? Why do you force me to do this? I hate this. But sooner or later, I'm like, thank you. You're my angel. You helped me, saved my life. Now, I loved it. Third grade, you had two rules in the beginning of class. It was, you must have a book before reading time. And the second rule was, if I pass by you, you must be reading. I follow the rules. I'm going to say that. I had a stack of picture books, my agenda, just in case I finish the novel I'm reading, and my novel that I'm like 20 pages away from finishing. I sit down by the wall and read. 5 minutes later, I'm done. I read these picture books about 15 times each, so I can name the pictures and what words are on each page. I'm like, do I reread the novel? Do I reread these picture books? Or do I pick up this agenda book that has the school rules and finally read the subsection of dress code? Now, I get bored easily. This novel I can recite by word by word or paraphrase it perfectly by now. These picture books, I can name them word by word. I can't paraphrase them right now. I pick up my agenda really, really slowly, reluctantly. The teacher's still halfway across the room, thank goodness. I slowly, slowly open this, and I'm like, okay, we got this. We got this. Just read them. I read the school rules. I read the agenda book. Now, I see feet coming by me because I'm reading. You still have that space between the book and your eyes. So you see feet, they stop. I'm like, please be staring at the person next to me, not me. I don't like being stared at, especially by teachers. No, she was staring at me. She said, you do know there is a bookshelf, right? She's pointing all the way across the room. I follow rules, and the last rule for reading time is you are not supposed to get up when reading time is happening. Oh, rule follower, getting up in the middle of reading time to walk across the room with a square-shaped desk set out and people blocking all entrances across the room, I'm like, no, not happening, but I'm keeping these feelings inside, reading this sentence on dress code shirts. Okay. Calm my breath, Pacey. You got this. Finishing this thought as well. Both thoughts. I look up. I'm like, but we're not supposed to get up. Miss Cappy, her reaction really did surprise me. She smiled, laughed and sighed all at once, because she knew I would not get up because it was a rule. Until she said, "Go get a book." And I'm like, okay. I figured out teachers want their students to enjoy reading because it's an escape from reality. Like middle school, like seriously. And then it just happened. I started adoring reading because of such an act of persuasion, strong persuasion. This year, I have adored the series called The Wishing Spell. And it's about two twins, a brother and a sister, who gets the fairy tale book from their deceased, or from their grandmother, that was written by their deceased father. This really actually made me cry, especially with the Evil Queen story. And then nowadays, I am doing an impossible dream. I'm having 5-hour conversations with my mom and oldest sister about reading, which whenever I was younger could not happen at all. And so I would pick up a book that's either on my bookshelves or scattered across my room, reread it. 5 hours later, I finish it, look at the clock, it's 5 hours later. I get up, tell my mom about this experience that I had of going into a fantasy world, and she would be a little upset because I did nothing for 5 hours other than read, but morally, she was happy and excited that I got her love of reading. And I was happy and excited that I am able to share her books. Thank you.
Next up is Jalen Boone. The title of his narrative is "You Have Now Entered the Friend Zone." South Wisconsin, born and raised, in his backyard where he spent most of his days. Now living in Bloomington, he enjoys playing basketball, good food with friends, and procrastinating. Jalen.
I loved middle school. You ever hear anyone say that before? I love middle school? No, you don't. You want to know why? Because no one loved middle school. No one at all. Unless you went to a really good middle school, in which case, good for you. So for me, at least, middle school was like a roller coaster. I had many ups and downs. I was, as my mom put it, a hormonal mess. I ate a lot. I cried a lot. I yelled a lot more than I do now. Let's see, what else? I slept a lot. I slept a whole lot much. But middle school, thanks to girls, middle school was not any more easier. So first day of middle school, I walked into my science class because it was the only class big enough to hold the entire middle school. There was chipped hardwood floors, pale blue walls, and black seats lining the perimeter of the room. And so I walk up to my my friend, Duncan, and we sort of just, you know, sit down. We start looking around, you know, around the room, seeing, you know, the different people in the classes. And we just start talking and we're like, "So who do you think is going to survive this year?" And we look at that kid and we're like, "He won't survive this semester." I'm like, "All right, see that kid? Won't survive a week." And so we start looking around, and I see this girl who reminded me of this other girl that I liked in sixth grade. And so, you know, naturally, you know, I was attracted to her, you know, blah, 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 blah. And once school actually started, we started saying our names, you know, what we did over the summer. I said my name was Jalen, said something stupid like played basketball over the summer. When it went around to her, she said her name was Bianca, and she went to L.A. over the summer. I really like that name. I don't know why. I really wanted to get to know her more. But unfortunately, something about middle school hormonal Jalen is that he was extremely timid when talking to girls. So thinking about talking to her scared me to death. So I didn't do it for a really long time. Our class, the 5th through 12th graders take a camping trip for everyone to get to know each other. And I was put in the same cabin as she was. And so I was like, "Hey, this is perfect. I'm going to be like super cool now. I'm going to be super chill. I'm going to be awesome. It's going to be great." It wasn't great. I didn't talk to her for like hours and hours. I just tried to avoid her because, you know, first impressions, you only get one chance to do it. And if I mess it up, I mess up forever. After a few hours, after everyone's done, you know, putting their stuff away, I look around. I'm like, everyone's chewing gum. I'm like, dude, where'd you get the gum? And so gum in middle school, in my middle school at least, was like currency, basically. If you had gum, you were one of the coolest kids in school. They were like cigarettes in prison, basically. I was like, hey, who has the gum? And they're like, oh, Bianca does. I'm like, oh, okay. He's like, do you want some gum? I'm like, yeah, I'll go get some. They're like, okay, all right. So now I walk up to the cabin. I'm like, oh, shoot, what am I going to say? I don't know what to say. And so I'm like, I'll just let the gum do all the talking. And so I walk up to the bunk bed, and I'm like, hey. And she's like, oh, hey. And I'm like, I heard you have gum. She's like, yeah, I do. I'm like, would you like some? Yes, I would. And so she gave me a piece. I'm like, so what's your name? I obviously knew her name, but, you know, I have to make conversation somehow. So, you know, that's what I start off with. And she's like, oh, my name is Bianca. I'm like, all right, I'm Jalen. She's like, oh, yeah, my friend told me about you. I'm like, she did? He's like, yeah. I'm like, what'd she say? She's like, oh, she said you were a really cool guy. I'm like, oh, thank God. So after couple like 30 minutes talking to her, we're like, hey, do you want to go talk some more, like, in the woods? I'm like, yeah, sure. Now, it wasn't like a romantic walk in the woods, you know. There was kids everywhere, you know, running around and yelling, so it was just more like a hike, I guess. And we talked about like a ton of stuff. She talked about how much she loved gymnastics and theater, and something I was really attracted by was how much passion she showed for the things she loved. And after talking to her for a little while, I started to realize how much enthusiasm and love she had for her interests and the people in her life. So after the camping trip, we sort of formed like a friend group consisting of me, Duncan, the kid we talked about in the classroom, and Bianca, and this really cool artist named Sam. She's not really important to the story, but she's super cool, so I gotta put her in there. And we were like, we don't even know how we really formed. I actually asked her, I'm like, how did we, you know, become us? And she's like, I don't know. We kind of formed just like the Power Rangers, you know, how they were like, hey, we're the Power Rangers now. And they're like, all right, cool. So that's basically what we did. We did everything together. We ate lunch together. We, if there was like a thing, like in the gym, we were like four people like in the corner doing stuff. If we had like a gathering of some kind, that was us. We're the four. We weren't like the coolest kids in school, but we're pretty tight. As the months went by, I learned a lot about Bianca. I learned how much she really, really liked theater, how much time and effort she put into it. We became closer and closer friends. Something that I learned about her is her obsession with like Disney movies. It was kind of interesting. No problem with it, but you know, it was an obsession. Let's see, what else? I had something. Oh, right. So, in this friend group, Duncan, I could definitely tell he also really liked her, which was a problem because, you know, he was my, you know, best friend. And then, you know, this was a girl that I liked. So, you know, it was kind of hard. So, we had like an extreme rivalry, with each other, which probably put a giant strain on our friendship. We're cool now, but it was a pretty big strain. Like whenever we played like basketball together, and she was watching, I could tell like he was like playing fine, you know, we were talking fine. And then she would walk in, she's like, oh, you go guys. And he just went silent. I'm like, hey dude, you okay? And he just like, he always beat me. He's, you know, he's always been better at basketball, but he like got seriously intense, and he's already a competitive player. So, you know, that wasn't very, you know, very good time in my life when that happened. And so, you know, we sort of, you know, tried to talk about it, I guess. And he was like, you know what, let's just stop being children, I guess. I'm like, yeah, definitely. And so, you know, as the years went by, we got closer and closer, but we actually became closer friends, which, you know, kind of not made me disappointed, I guess, but kind of, you know, made you sad, you know, like, hey, I really like you. And like, oh, I don't really like you. And you're like, thanks. Yeah, I never really gave up, I guess you could say. I used to put, like, for instance, she always got sour cream Pringles, so I would give her original Pringles because she really liked original Pringles. I used to make her upset sometimes because, you know, I say stupid stuff. And so I, like, write her a note saying, I'm really sorry. She told me she actually kept those, which made me really happy, you know, because, you know. But anyway, in eighth grade, my friends, they were standing next to a locker that we usually ate lunch by, and I'm like, hey, my three best buddies are next to the locker, let me go sprint over there and tackle Duncan. And so I did that. That was not the best decision I should have done. He's like, dude, what the heck? I'm like, what? That's what, because I usually tackle him, and he's like, he's cool with it, and he wasn't today. And then I saw Bianca crying. I'm like, oh shoot, why are you crying? She was like, I'm leaving. And I'm like, dang it. But here's the reason why. I did cry with her. It was mostly me and Bianca crying. The other two were like stone, you know, they got hearts of, I don't know, something. They didn't cry, but I cried a lot. The reason why I cried wasn't because the girl I liked was, you know, leaving my school, and that meant no chance of us being together. I was crying because, you know, one of my best friends was leaving, and that I wasn't going to see them as much. And that, you know, we weren't going to be as close as we used to be. So after the years, you know, I've learned a lot about romance. I'm still learning. Most important thing that I've learned, I'm not really good at it. I'm not really good at romance at all. You know, me and Bianca, we're still close together. We still talk from time to time. But, you know, today still, I eat a lot. I sleep a lot. I cry a lot. But one thing that I've learned is that, you know, I love a lot, and that I'm cool with loving the people in my life. Friend zone or no friend zone. All right. Thank you.
Next up, we're going to have Jack Newquist with his story, Tummy Trouble. Jack Newquist lives with a dog named Phoebe, and he loves food. Jack.
When I was a kid, I hated puking. Every time I told someone this, they would respond with, oh, doesn't everyone? And I'd just wave it off because I haven't met a person yet who likes puking. But what I was too little to understand is I had a phobia of puking. A phobia of puking is called emetophobia. And I think I unofficially had this. Thinking back on it, I can think of four reasons why I really had it. So one of the first things I can even remember about my life was being around 3 or 4 years old and a bright red swing in my backyard. My mom was pushing me, and we had taken a break just long enough for her to feed me a hot dog. And hot dogs are disgusting. They're really gross. They really are. So every time she fed me one, I would just have her drown it with ketchup because I couldn't deal with the taste. It's so gross. So she was feeding me this cut-up hot dog, and soon after, we resumed swinging. And I got really, really dizzy. So I threw up, and in the grass below me was this pile of puked up hot dog. And it was the first words out of my brother's mouth was, Mom, is that his intestines? And at this point, I was freaking out. I didn't know what to do. I really didn't. I just kind of sat there, and I was like, oh, I guess this is it. So she reassured me that, no, this was just the hot dog. So I calmed down slightly, and I believe I went inside after that, but that was traumatizing. That was terrible. So maybe a year or two later, I was in first grade, and I went to Rogers Elementary School. And at Rogers, their auditorium is the same as their gym. So we were running relay races that day. And I was in the back of the line, stretching up against the stage, and I reached my arm underneath the curtain. And I felt something very wet. And it wasn't quite liquid, and it wasn't quite a solid. It was more like a applesauce sort of, maybe a little bit firmer than that, substance. So I took my arm out from underneath the curtain, and I examined it, and after maybe a full minute of just kind of sitting there not really knowing what to do, I realized that it was puke. And so I had my moment of panic, and I went to the school library where I found my mom, and she was volunteering that day. So she took me to the bathroom, and it was a long sleeve shirt, so it was like, it was covered, my hand was covered, it was disgusting. So she took my shirt off, and then she put it under the sink and washed it off, and then took me home. And that was that. It was traumatizing. I think that would traumatize any of you. Like, I really do. So it was at such a young age that it was horrific. So maybe a year after that. I just went through a couple of years that were super unlucky. But maybe a year after that, we were on our way to a Thanksgiving dinner. And my mom had made broccoli rice casserole. And I told her that the smell was disgusting. And she didn't listen. And it didn't help, but I had an ear infection during this time. And as some of you might know, that can really offset your balance, so then make you dizzy at times. So I was really sick, and they wanted to put me in the car right next to it. So I told them it was a bad idea, and they regretted it, because as soon as they put me in the car, I projectile vomited. And it was like, it was just all over the car seat, and it took a while to clean up, and it was traumatizing, and broccoli rice casserole is gross. I didn't eat broccoli for years after that until I decided that it was okay if I drowned it out with ranch. And broccoli and cheese still can make me gag if I look at it. But it just added. So one of the last times that I had a terrible puking incident was the night before we took a road trip to Disney World. We were celebrating my grandmother's birthday, and we ate a cake that had raspberry filling, and we had it with strawberry ice cream. So I eat it, I go to bed, and I wake up around midnight, go to the bathroom, puke in the toilet. It's like, whatever. I mean, at this point, I've had many traumatic experiences. But the puke comes out in the toilet, and it's all red, so I think it's blood. And, you know, that didn't help at all. But after coming down and going to sleep, I felt, like, a lot better the next morning. So I wasn't taking chances. So I ate a light breakfast. It was just a piece of toast, and I took a bottle of Gatorade out of the house as we left, and we were on our way. So there's a road that many of you know. It's near Brewster's. I think it's called 46. And our family calls it the curvy road because about halfway through it, we get really car sick, mostly because of my dad drives kind of like slowish at times and fast at others, so we get really motion sickness. Or we get motion sickness. So I ate a light breakfast, and I took the bottle of Gatorade with me, and as we got to the road, I was feeling really thirsty, and it's never a good idea to drink a lot while you have the stomach flu. but I felt really good, so I drank maybe half the bottle of Gatorade in like maybe 5 seconds, and my stomach started to gurgle, and like it made some not okay noises. So I grabbed a paper bag and I hurled, and out came the piece of toast that I had eaten that morning, and that there was the green-colored Gatorade that now smelled like that distinct puke smell that everyone knows. So we sat in the car with that smell and that paper bag all the way until we made it to the gas station. And by that time, I just, like, I really thought that I was not going to make it. Just these traumatic experiences were, they really scarred me. But I had a happy period after all of this, and it was fourth through fifth grade when I didn't end up getting the stomach flu, and it felt great. Like, I loved it. Like, I felt like I was invincible. But anyway, I puked again in sixth grade, and by that time, I really felt like I had overcome my phobia. I didn't violently shake and cry when I puked, and it just wasn't that concerning. It was something that I knew was just going to pass, and after I knew I was going to feel better. So after that experience, I've never really had to deal with a traumatic puking experience, and from this I pulled "This too shall pass," and I use that for a lot of uncomfortable situations that I come across these days. So it doesn't really matter what the uncomfortable situation is, but as long as you know that you're going to make it through and your life's not over yet, then you'll make it through and you'll be happy at the end. So, yep. Thanks, guys.
You have been listening to a series of stories told in early April by a group of students taught by Rachel Barr at the Academy of Science and Entrepreneurship. Stories this week came from Trevor Shaw, Emmanuel Corder, Amy Martin, Jared Stewart, Pacey Wu, Jalen Boone, and Jack Newquist. Their themes ranged from dealing with a campsite disaster to embracing friendship no matter what. The commonality was that each storyteller learned something new.
You've been listening to Standing Room Only. Join us each week for on-location recordings of lectures, town hall meetings, and other public forums. If there's a particular event you'd like to hear broadcast on this program, email that information to us directly at news@wfhb.org. The Standing Room Only archive is available online at wfhb.org/news. Standing Room Only is a production of our volunteer-powered news and public affairs department here on Community Radio, WFHB.